The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. When I originally read The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, as a child and as a teenager, there was one type of thing that Tolkien would do in the books that was my least favorite. And I know I gush all the time about all the things I love about the way Tolkien writes things, and I'm going to gush about this now because it was something that I didn't fully understand and something that I often avoided. In fact, I would even skip these passages sometimes because I just didn't get it. I didn't understand the value. I felt like it slowed down the progress of the story, and it was the least interesting thing you could add into a book like this. And what I'm talking about here are the sections of the stories, kind of in between the major moments where the party is traveling, whether it's, you know, Bilbo and the dwarves, or whether it's the Fellowship, or whoever happens to be traveling, because there's a lot of traveling in both of these books. These are both odysseys, if you were to put them in a classical category. There are these moments where Tolkien stops to smell the flowers, so to speak. And maybe sometimes it actually is flowers, but oftentimes it's a description of the landscape, or a description very, very regularly of trees and plants and the things that they're passing as they travel. And I always thought that these were just sections that could have been cut out. Why spend so much time in a book with adventures and interesting characters and really cool hints at the breadth of history, all of these engaging moments, to talk about something as boring as trees? I didn't understand. But now I understand. This does a few things. It gives us a time to take a breath between the more exciting moments of the story. It gives us time to ourselves to stop and smell the flowers, but it also presents an opportunity for us to get a sense of how the journey would actually feel if we were there. How many times have you been on a trip where you've been traveling by car and you've noticed, oh, we've just spent the last 5 hours driving and the trees look different. The countryside looks different. Oh, the landscape looks different. I live in Florida. If I travel north from Florida, there is a place where all of a sudden it's not soil and dirt and sand on the ground. It's clay. And it's very noticeable. It gives you the sense of being in a different place. You can tell in these moments that Tolkien had a firm grasp on nature and being in the world and what that feels like, the dirt under your feet, the rain in the leaves of trees. These are moments that we grow further and further away from. I know I myself spend a lot of time in my home office working on my shows and my podcasts, and I need to remind myself sometimes to go outside and touch the grass. And I should do that more often. When I do, when I make a point to go on a jog or to exercise and actually run around my neighborhood, breathing in the fresh air, noticing the wind in the trees, it brings a certain sense of calm to me. There's something about being in nature that is, well, no surprise, fundamental to being a human being, because that's where we always were. There's also another thing going on here. Tolkien loves trees. He understands the names of different types of trees and different types of plants on a very intricate kind of basis. I have to look these up, and I'll reveal some of the things that show up in this episode as well and what kinds of plants they actually are, because I had to look them up because I'm not that knowledgeable about this. But Tolkien obviously was. And this ties into his whole theme about nature versus industry, and the way that industry destroys nature is counter to what actually we should be valuing. We should value the natural world. It's important. And even in his time, he noticed that it was being eroded. It was being destroyed. He was ahead of his time in so many different ways. And that's just one of them. So let's get into the story this week as Bilbo, the dwarves, and Gandalf travel as fast as they can to get away from the goblins, who they know will be searching for them come nightfall. But the wizard called them to their senses. "We must be getting on at once. Now we are a little rested," he said. "They will be out after us in hundreds when night comes on, and already shadows are lengthening. They can smell our footsteps for hours and hours after we have passed. We must be miles on before dusk. There will be a bit of moon if it keeps fine, and that is lucky, not that they mind the moon much, but it will give us a little light to steer by." So this is the beginning of this section of this chapter where they are now fleeing for their lives. And notice Gandalf here says that they need to travel miles before dusk. And we were reminded recently that they could already see the shadows growing on the trees. So it is past afternoon. They need to travel miles within just a few hours. Also, just a little point that I noted here. He uses the word miles. He doesn't use kilometers. Now, maybe you're like me and you would have assumed that he would have said kilometers, but turns out that it wasn't until 1940 that the UK adopted using kilometers in mapping. So it makes sense that they would still say miles back then. But also, miles is kind of a more antiquated term compared to kilometer. So even if that was in the common parlance of the people of the UK, it would make sense that Tolkien here would use miles because it feels older. Also notice that we were reminded that the goblins are waiting for night because they don't like the sun, but they don't mind the moon very much. The moon isn't an issue for them, which is kind of interesting when you understand the origins of the sun and the moon. You would think that both of them being things that the Valar have put in the sky that are basically Maiar floating around around the planet, you would assume that they would maybe have a problem with the moon, but I can see why that doesn't really work for story reasons, and also the moon isn't as bright, so maybe that's part of it as well. It continues on, and then we get this interesting line where Gandalf just answers a question from the Hobbit. It says, "Oh yes," he said in answer to more questions from the Hobbit. We don't actually get the questions here, which is interesting to me because it feels like one of those rare moments where Tolkien just kind of skips ahead and just goes, okay, the Hobbit asked some questions. And then he explains to us that, well, yeah, we've lost track of time. Today is Thursday. It was Monday or Tuesday night. It was like Monday night or Tuesday morning when we were captured. So it's actually been a few days. And that's kind of amazing when you think about it, that these individuals have been fleeing for their lives for days on end and have had barely anything, if nothing, to eat at all during all of that time. And this is something Tolkien does sometimes as well. He will take moments like this to remind us of the physical state of the individuals, because there wasn't really time to talk about that during the exciting things that happened previously. If you had interrupted the riddle game with Bilbo and Gollum in order to say things like, "And he was especially exhausted because he hasn't slept in 2 days, and he was very hungry, and he had realized that in the moment," like, that's not what Bilbo was thinking about. Bilbo was clearly in a desperate situation, probably exhausted, and those kinds of things were being hinted at with just the way the scene played out. But to stop and just say, this is the state of Bilbo's being right now, wouldn't really flow with the focus of that chapter. So this is the point where we get to kind of catch up on all of that. And we find out that Bilbo is dreadfully hungry, he groans. So he has become in this moment suddenly aware that he had not had a meal since the night before last. And I love the way Tolkien phrases those kinds of things. The night before. So we catch up with Bilbo's well-being the same time that Bilbo is catching up with his own well-being. And this feels very real to me. How many times have you been in a moment where you have been super focused on something or really, really hard at work, and a significant period of time goes by and you finally take a moment to have a break and you realize, oh, I'm starving, or, oh, I really need to go to the bathroom and I've just not done it in a while, or something like that. It feels like a very human thing. And I love the description about his stomach felt all empty and loose and his legs all wobbly now that the excitement was over. And the next few lines, I feel like we're being brought back to this more playful tone in the story. Even though they're still in danger here, it's a moment to kind of take a breath and to add some more playfulness to it. Because Gandalf responds, "Can't help it. Unless you like to go back and ask the goblins nicely to let you have your pony back and your luggage." "No, thank you," said Bilbo. It's one of those more comedic moments where you get the sense that, like, Gandalf is just kind of like playing with that reaction. I mean, clearly he's not serious and doesn't think Bilbo's going to take him up on it. But Bilbo responds emphatically, "No, thank you." Like, so he's very much taking it seriously. And then we get the line, "Very well then, we must just tighten our belts and trudge on." This is a line that shows up a lot. Tighten your belt. How many times? We'll have to count it when we get to the Lord of the Rings. But how many times do Frodo and Sam specifically tighten their belts and trudge on? And for a long time, I read that as, well, if you tighten your belt and it's tighter around your stomach, then your stomach won't notice how hungry it is. And maybe there's some sense of it like that. But when you consider the fact that they are going on these long journeys with all of this physical exertion and little to eat, they all lose weight. The hobbits are kind of plump. They're kind of, you know, well off. They eat well. They've got a little bit of extra weight on them. And it's something that Tolkien points out fairly often, that you need to tighten your belt. And I think that's also because their pants get looser. That's the reason you have a belt, is to make sure that you can kind of cinch it up as you lose weight on your journey. And it's not something that I ever really considered, but I would imagine anybody who's traveled cross country and been out, especially on these like long hikes and things like that, you will notice physical changes by the time you're done with that journey. So it makes sense. And then we get the line about we shall be made into supper, which is much worse than having one ourselves, which I feel like, again, even though it's dangerous, there's something comedic about comparing the two things. Like, you're hungry, you want to eat, but you don't want to get eaten by these goblins. So it's dangerous, but yet still fun. We're kind of in that moment of kind of playful tone. And then the story moves on and we start to get descriptions of plants, specifically starting with things that Bilbo's looking to eat. Blackberries. And of course, there were no nuts, not even hawthorn berries. Now, let's get into some of the details here. I am not particularly familiar with hawthorn berries, but it turns out that hawthorn berries are fairly common in places like the UK. According to the Wikipedia article, it says the name hawthorn was originally applied to the species native to northern Europe, especially the common hawthorn, C. monogyna. Monogyna? I think that's how that's pronounced. And the unmodified name is often used in Britain and Ireland. So this is something that Tolkien would have been familiar with. And these are kind of these little red berries. They almost look like cherries when they're ripe. So there you go. When they say hawthorn berries, think of a little cherry-like berries. And the very next line, we get another one. He says, he nibbled a bit of sorrel, and he drank from a small mountain stream that crossed the path, and he ate three wild strawberries that he found on its bank, but it was not much good. So we get strawberries that most of us would recognize, so that's not that exciting. But we do have sorrel, S-O-R-R-E-L, and this is a perennial herbaceous plant in the family, I'm going to mess this up, Polygonaceae, something like that. Other names for sorrel include spinach dock and narrow-leaved dock sorrel. This is something that is kind of like a leaf and would be used in certain types of dishes and potentially even dried and used for seasoning. So Bilbo's still hungry, he's still looking for food, and they're continuing their journey down this rough path, but it starts to disappear. We're told the bushes and long grasses between the boulders, the patches of rabbit-cropped turf. I love that imagery. There are some little rabbits, some little bunnies that live in the weeds along some kind of, I don't know, swampy lake areas nearby where I live. And you can see the little paths that they make through the tall grass that they kind of poke out of. And they often come out in the mornings and the evenings to chew on the grass and will very specifically drive by to say hi to the bunnies. This is just personal note. My wife is hilarious. We'll slow down and she loves looking at the bunnies and she says, "Hey bunnies, it's your mom. It's your mom. Hi bunnies." And she gets all cute about it. It's wonderful. So anyway, rabbit cropped turf, which always makes me think of that, and thyme and the sage and the marjoram and the yellow rock roses all vanished. So all of this stuff is starting to go away, and it gives us this picture. And some of us are probably familiar with thyme and sage. Those are seasons that are more common, or seasonings that are more common here in the U.S., at least as far as I'm aware. I'm by no means an expert on this type of thing. But then we have marjoram, which I was less familiar with, and that is an aromatic southern European plant of the mint family, the leaves of which are used as a culinary herb, so kind of like a mint. And then the yellow rock roses, which is an herbaceous or shrubby plant with rose-like flowers native to temperate and warm regions, another term for bitterroot.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel, because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
So all of these are kind of falling away as the landscape becomes more rocky and steep. And they come across this slope. And I'm going to read this entire few sentences here. This is what it says. When they began to go down this, rubbish and small pebbles rolled away from their feet. Soon larger bits of split stone went clattering down and started other pieces below them slithering and rolling. Then lumps of rock were disturbed and bounded off, crashing down with a dust and a noise. Before long, the whole slope above them and below them seemed on the move, and they were sliding away, huddled all together in a fearful confusion of slipping, rattling, cracking slabs and stones. The sounds that he uses, the words that he uses to convey the way the rocks move and the way they sound, all of these words are so good. Slithering and rolling, crashing, splitting. This is so evocative that you can kind of picture what they're actually going through here. He paints an image with words. I find it so engaging to read through this passage, very particularly noticing all of this. And then after they slide down this mountain with all of this rubble and rock and all of the pieces of the mountain kind of coming with them, we get this. It was the trees at the bottom that saved them. Now we get this description of them kind of grabbing onto the trees and you know, holding onto them in order to stop sliding. But notice the trees at the bottom that saved them. This will not be the only time in these stories where characters or they themselves, this specific group, is saved by trees. In the coming passage, we have the wolves and all of that stuff. And if you're familiar with the story, they climb up in the trees, and that also helps to save them. But it's also symbolic of this theme of nature. If it wasn't for the trees, they would not have been saved. And that becomes even more literal when we get to the Ents in The Lord of the Rings. So after this whole thing happens and they slide down the mountain, we get this line from Gandalf. "Well, that has got us on a bit," said Gandalf, "and even goblins tracking us will have a job to come down here quietly." And we get this interesting moment where Bomber actually speaks for maybe the first time. I don't recall specifically, but he talks about how they might just send rocks down on their heads, that sort of thing. But what I find interesting about this passage is there is a word for, or the words that mean when something bad happens, but it's actually good. In Latin, this is felix culpa. It basically means a happy or lucky fault. And when you think about what they're going through here, they are trying to flee from the goblins. And we were just told that the goblins can even smell their footprints. What just erased their footprints? So Tolkien doesn't specifically state it here, but because of this problem that they just went through where they were in danger, it may actually make it safer for them in the future, assuming that the goblins are tracking them the way goblins would track footprints. But we come to find out that that may not actually be the case. Gandalf takes them down a side path, and we get another update on roughly how much time has gone by, because they don't really have watches with them, so they have to use the sun to track this. And we're told that the sun had gone down behind the mountains, basically long gone down behind the mountains, so it's been that low on the horizon for a while now, and already the shadows were deepening about them. And we're given this description, beginning here, of moving into darkness. Not just darkness in the sense that they're moving into night because it's this natural rhythm of time and that sort of thing, but more like they're moving into a tonal change. The situation's going from being kind of fun and silly to, oh, dangerous situation, they were saved by the trees, to, wait a minute, something's not right. And we can assume also that they were somewhat injured from this sliding down the mountain. It's not specifically said, but it's kind of implied with lines like, they limped along now as fast as they were able. I would imagine that you would be very sore from going through that, and yet they have to keep pushing. They have to keep moving. And then we get more landscape changes. The slope is now described as gentle. There's pine forest slanting down the direction they're going. They pushed through a sea of bracken with tall fronds that were taller than the hobbit's head. Again, pointing images of what they're going through. They're walking over a floor of pine needles. And then we get this. The forest gloom got heavier and the forest silence deeper. If you've been out in the wilderness and all of a sudden all of the bird sounds and insect sounds or whatever just disappear, it's spooky. It leaves you with this sense of dread, like there's something happening and I don't know what it is yet. And in this situation, it's not just the birds and the animals that are quiet. It's also described here that there was no wind that evening to bring even a sea sighing, wonderful phrase, into the branches of the trees. So even the trees, which trees just saved them, are silent. Again, this is odd. This is spooky. And Bilbo senses it. He's the first one to speak up. Must we go any further? And we're given this other description. It's now getting dark. So now it's silent and it's getting dark to the point where Bilbo can only just see Thorin's beard wagging beside him. He's walking alongside next to Thorin. And if you have a picture of Thorin from the movies in your head, that doesn't really make too much sense, because in the movies, he's given a very short beard in order to look more handsome, I guess. But in actuality, he's a dwarf and he would have worn his beard very long. So that's one of the aspects of the movies that they kind of change up a bit. And in this moment, the contrast with the silence is the breathing of the dwarves, which we've been told before is fairly loud. And to Bilbo, it sounds like a lot of noise, especially in contrast here. But then he complains, and he's complaining not just in this situation because he's in pain but because he senses something. He says, "My toes are all bruised and bent, and my legs ache, and my stomach is wagging like an empty sack." If he was hungry, he would want to continue on in order to find more food. It's the danger of the situation that's causing him to complain. And Gandalf pipes up and says, "A bit further." And then we get this. After what seemed ages further, they came suddenly to an opening where no trees grew. That is a warning. This is a place with no trees. We were just given descriptions of all sorts of plants and trees along the paths that they had come. And yet, we are now moving into a silent, dark space without any trees. This is the third warning that they're moving in a bad direction. The moon was up and was shining into the clearing. Somehow it struck all of them as not at all a nice place, although there was nothing wrong to see. It's the absence of things that is cluing them into this. And then they hear a howl. A long, shuddering howl. Not just a howl. Notice that it's spooky. Shuddering. And then another one. And then another one closer to them. And then we get this explanation. Wolves howling at the moon. Wolves gathering together. Now, this wouldn't normally be something you would think would be odd to hear in the wilderness. But in this situation, we've already been painted that they are vulnerable. They are in a spooky situation. They are in the dark. It is silent. And then all of a sudden, you get the howling of wolves in a place that they are standing with nothing to hide behind. And to add to the moment, we get this personal explanation about Bilbo's understanding of wolves. Here, I'm going to read the paragraph here. It says, "There were no wolves living near Mr. Baggins' hole at home, but he knew that noise. He had had it described to him often enough in tales. One of his elder cousins on the Took side, the more adventuring side, who had been a great traveler, used to imitate it to frighten him. To hear it out in the forest under the moon was too much for Bilbo. Even magic rings are not much use against wolves, especially against the evil packs that lived under the shadow of the goblin-infested mountains, over the edge of the wild, on the borders of the unknown. Wolves of that sort smell keener than goblins, and do not need to see you to catch you." So we're reminded here that he has the ring, and that would be maybe the first thing you would think is put on the ring, hide from the wolves, but the wolves can smell him. They will find him anyway. And we're given this even more specific description about the wolves, about how evil they are, because they are beyond the edge of the wild, in the unknown, on the borders of the unknown specifically. They are more dangerous because these are not just regular wolves that you would see in a place like, I don't know, the outskirts of the Shire as you were traveling to or away from the area where Bilbo lives, which there aren't any wolves. These are a different kind of wolf. They are more dangerous. They are more monstrous. They are more fey. Remember, the land of the fey, the fairy, is not just beautiful, but also dangerous. And when you come from a place like the Shire, a place very similar to our own reality, and you stray into the Fae, you are now straying into a world of unknown dangers and beauty at the same time. And the party knows that they are in danger, and they start to panic. "What shall we do? What shall we do?" he cried. "Escaping goblins to be caught by wolves," he said. And it became a proverb, though we now say, "Out of the frying pan, into the fire," in the same sort of uncomfortable situations. Thank you so much for joining me again for this episode. I hope you enjoyed a look at the landscape and the plants. I have to shout out our new patrons. We got a bunch that have signed up. I recorded the last episode a little bit earlier in the week, so I've got to catch up on all of you. Rain Z, I don't remember if I called you out last time. If I did, you get a double call out. Sheila's Brood, Celeste LG, Abin Hasso, I hope I pronounced that correctly, Sierra K, Wendy B, Roberg, Alex, Corey R, and Bob D. Thank you so much for joining and supporting this show. As I've always said, I can't do it without you, and I really do appreciate the support. Also, if you are considering supporting or even just plugging into the community a little bit more, feel free to join as a free member. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. You can just join the Patreon for free. You'll get updates and notifications about like when I'm going to take a week off and those kinds of things. But also, if you're on the Patreon, one of the things I'm tossing around is doing some giveaways, and then I would be pulling from different people on the Patreon, including the free members, in order to do giveaways. So think about doing that. There are currently 198, holy crap, supporters of this podcast. I didn't realize we were that close to 200. That is phenomenal. Thank you to all of you. And as usual, if you sign up at different tiers, you get ad-free episodes, you get bonus episodes, you get t-shirts, there's all sorts of fun stuff. So go check it out. And this week's bonus episode, I'll be going into some more of the dwarves. We're talking like Owen and Glowin and their father and Dwalin and Balin and Dwalin's father. And we'll see how much we can find out about all of them. Also, I have to shout out our VIP patrons. So let's get through that real quick. AK Music Lover, Apollo, Atlee Morton, Azel Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Callie Cat, Courtney S, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli A Break, Ginger Fury, I'm going to mess up some of these names for sure, Huan Is My Hero, Gemma D, Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Richard J, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, The Silly Marillion, TJT, Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much to all of you. Every time I have to get through that whole list and I always mess something up. Also, if you'd like to support the show in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and I'll read out your reviews. And I don't have any new ones this week, which means, or at least in the US one, which is the only one I can see because I don't have an app that consolidates everything anymore, unfortunately. But I do appreciate it if you leave a rating and a review, even if I can't read it. And if you do live in the US and you leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, I'll read it on a future episode. You can also rate the show on Spotify. You can share it with your friends. And again, thank you so much. I couldn't do this without you. All right. Well, I'm going to go record the bonus episode. You have a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.